sa conférence qu'il va faire maintenant sur le futur de All Marketing is Direct ne peut que nous passionner. Et c'est bien sûr sans attendre que je vais lui laisser le micro. Comme on dit sur Broadway, John, I leave you the floor.
Thank you so much, Bernard. Thank you very, very much for that kind introduction. I certainly hope that I can live up to your very wonderful, flattering comments and the kind recognition. I am so very, very pleased to have this opportunity to be with all of you, to get better acquainted with France and with French business, and to share some ideas about how we can help all of our members build their businesses by building bridges between our countries. I want to congratulate Circle du Marketing Direct on the anniversary of 25 years. That's quite an accomplishment, and I wish you all of the very best for the future, which is the subject of my remarks today, the future. Now, if any of you, like me, still remember 1983, and I'm dating myself a little bit here in terms of my age, in many ways, that may seem like just yesterday. Think for a minute, though. Back then, most countries maintained a very firm regulatory grip on both the posts and the telephone service. International charges still kept the cost of both artificially high. Here in France, you had just introduced the Minitel, a system that impressed many of us in America as a bold step in the information age. Clearly, France has never been afraid of new technology, and in many ways, you have been pioneers. In 1983, rudimentary personal computers had also just arrived. And most of the mobile phones were still in just a few cars, with equipment that filled up half of the trunk. It would be almost another decade before we start to hear about something called the internet. Servers were still people in white aprons who brought food and drink. How quickly that scene has changed. Flash forward 25 years, and you would have to agree that we have been living in a rapidly changing world. Everywhere you look, lines are blurring. In the greatest sense, the lines between local markets and global markets seem to be constantly changing. And this influences all of us, I'm sure. At the same time, the lines that once separated direct marketing from the rest of advertising and sales are disappearing. Now, I base this observation on a definition that says the role of marketing is to create value for buyers and sellers. In today's world, that means building relationships directly with buyers, by giving them relevant information, treating them responsibly, and achieving the results that both sides value. That's why I say direct marketing, or marketing direct as you say it, is really the future of all marketing. Through the use of multiple channels and new direct response approaches to traditional marketing across all markets, all industries, all sectors. This is the context for my remarks today, beginning with an assessment of the challenges all marketers face in today's world. Among the most fundamental of these challenges is globalization. The reality that, as our American newspaper columnist and author Thomas Friedman puts it, the world has grown flat. Friedman's sweeping observation of life in the 21st century really reflects the scope of the challenges that we all face in adapting to a completely new kind of world. It applies to everyone, and and most of all to marketers. Friedman talks about the convergence of technology and events that have allowed so many countries, especially India and China, to become a part of a global supply chain for services and manufacturing, creating an explosion of middle-class wealth around the world. Today, we're seeing the evidence in global markets that are remaining strong, in spite of the major pressure of economic slowdowns in specific countries, such as the US, and in specific sectors, such as financial services. The challenges for marketers in this flat world include always finding ways to move faster, just in order to keep your place. The competition comes from new and sometimes very unexpected sources. Another big challenge for marketing comes in the form of a power shift from seller to buyer. Marketing begins and ends with the customer. Whether that customer is a consumer, a commercial account, or a donor for a nonprofit organization. Like most of us, many of today's customers live in a world of information clutter and time deprivation. New technology makes it easier for us to avoid marketing messages that we don't want, whether it's filtering our email or skipping ahead on TiVo. In addition, technology has given us unprecedented choices to collect the information that we do want, the things that are most relevant to what's on our mind at any given moment. We all have a lot more places that we can look for information, even though we have less time than ever to research buying decisions. In the print media, hundreds of new magazine titles are being launched each year, catering to the interests and the needs of increasingly specific communities. Online social communities of all sizes and shapes are converging on the internet, and I understand that these are becoming very popular here in France, as in the rest of the world. They're driven by the explosion of user-generated content that's driving viral communications in new ways and with greater impact. From auctions to search engines to weblogs, the internet plays a major role in this. From wireless phones with cameras and GPS to wikis and rich multimedia, consumers have more tools and capabilities at their fingertips than ever before. In short, people are enjoying a level of empowerment as buyers, unlike anything we've ever experienced before. Now, I said earlier that the lines are blurring between local and global markets. We also see this happening between media, for instance. The line between television broadcasting and personal video is rapidly disappearing. The availability of broadband media content on the internet, delivered by satellite, cable, or mobile connections, further obscures the boundaries that used to separate these channels. Perhaps most significant is the fact that the lines between direct marketing and brand advertising are virtually completely disappearing. Direct marketing and brand building are being integrated in today's digital multi-channel universe because that's the way marketing can increase response rates, grow sales, enhance profitability, and build brand awareness. In the US, we recently released a groundbreaking research report that illustrates how the versatility and the measurability of direct marketing have led marketers to integrate direct marketing tactics into all their brand marketing efforts across multiple channels. Direct marketing tactics designed to increase consumer awareness and action are becoming ubiquitous, from putting web addresses, URLs on all marketing materials, to promoting toll-free voice and text numbers, to putting a direct call to action in every TV, radio, and print ad, and in every other marketing communications channel. Our data shows that expert marketers with more experience are most likely to be seizing the opportunity to combine direct response techniques into brand advertising in all media. Overall, 56% of respondents said they're already utilizing one or more direct marketing channels in conjunction with their brand awareness advertising. Now, why is that? Nearly 70% of the brand marketers rated personalization as having a positive or strong positive effect on brand. 64% said targeting has a positive or strong positive effect. About half of the brand marketing people that we talk to report using web marketing with response mechanisms, trackable offers, and targeted email. Over 40% of them are building lists for use in branding campaigns. Intricately, with the brand marketers in this study estimated that on average, 64% of their marketing dollars are now allocated to direct marketing, with 36% going towards traditional mass advertising. They are on the leading edge of another major change that we're seeing recently across marketing. As marketers search for the right mix of channels and techniques in their media plans, we've reached our tipping point with direct marketing. And let me tell you what I mean by that. Since 1995, right, one of the major services our DMA has provided to the entire marketing community is a comprehensive analysis and forecast of direct marketing's economic impact on the U.S. economy. And I'd love to work with you to figure out how to expand that so that we're collaborating and looking at global economies and looking at how does this really play out country by country. But let me stick with the results that I know best for the moment for this example. It examines advertising expenditures and sales based on a cross-industry economic model that we've developed with global insight. Now, my next few data points all come from that DMA report, which we call The Power of Direct Marketing. For the first time ever, direct marketing represents more than 50% of our total advertising expenditures in the U.S., and it's growing faster than total advertising spending and the U.S. economy as a whole. Just 5 years ago, non-direct mass advertising received significantly more investment than direct marketing advertising. This year, however, businesses and nonprofits will invest over $173 billion on direct marketing across all the channels. And by the way, that happens to drive over $2 trillion in the United States gross domestic product. So it's over 10% of our GDP is driven by direct marketing channels. With over 50% of all advertising expenditures now going into direct marketing campaigns, I expect this shift to accelerate rapidly over the next several years. The shift of advertising dollars to direct marketing is not simply a move from old media to new. It also represents the blurring of lines that we talked about a moment ago. As a result, marketing services like lists and data, direct response and promotion, previously seen as below-the-line expenses, are moving up in a fundamental reevaluation of advertising budgets, along with the new media platforms that have emerged. At the end of the day, marketers invest in direct marketing simply because the return on investment, or ROI, is higher relative to other forms of advertising. In 2007, every dollar spent on direct marketing advertising resulted in $11.69 worth of direct marketing-driven sales, and that's on average. Compare that to the ROI trend that you can see for non-direct advertising. General mass advertising is getting less and less effective. This year, its ROI dropped to just $5.24. Non-catalog direct mail advertising is a stellar performer in the U.S., with an average ROI of over $15. Average ROI on catalog direct mail, while lower, still comes in well over $7. Now, the range of ROIs among all direct marketing channels goes from an average of $7 to $8 with direct response broadcast ads to as much as $50 with email direct marketing. And those are just averages. The most successful direct marketing campaigns, like those that we honor each year with the DMA International Echo Awards, often achieve individual ROIs that are far higher. From a results standpoint, the future looks very, very bright for direct marketing. Let me take just a few minutes to describe some of what our DMA is doing to facilitate this growth. We concentrate on fostering excellence through the process. We define excellence in several dimensions. First of all, our DMA members place a very high priority on having excellent ethical standards and business practices, whether they're in catalogs or in email marketing or anywhere across the multi-channel direct marketing process. Our DMA guidelines for ethical business practice have been in place since the 1960s, and they've been continually adapted and expanded to set standards of responsible stewardship in marketer-consumer relationships. Recently, we strengthened and clarified our guidelines relating to collection and sharing of consumer information by data compiler organizations. We have what we call a secret shopper project that monitors compliance to many of our privacy guidelines and policies by 400 leading consumer marketing companies. Another definition of our excellence is contained in the best practices and competitive competencies that we help develop through a comprehensive education program for direct marketing professionals. More and more of our content is available online with virtual seminars or through self-paced interactive modules, such as our new certification program in search engine marketing. And this is clearly an area that I would love to see us collaborating more on in terms of learning from each other, leveraging best practices, having truly a global capability in terms of continuous education and professional development. Our Direct Marketing Education Foundation works with college professors and students at both the graduate and the undergraduate levels to foster excellence in teaching the fundamentals of interactive multi-channel direct marketing. This is our strategy for ensuring that we will have a sufficient supply of new talent to match the growth of direct that I mentioned earlier. We also focus on excellence in arranging our annual conferences and other networking opportunities, meetings, seminars and events across a far-flung community. Excellence strategy is the focus of a variety of DMA research efforts, a few of which I've cited today. We help develop excellence in market intelligence to keep up with the fast-changing world. And finally, we recognize excellence in execution, strategy, creative, and results with our international Echo Awards competition that we hold each year. And if you haven't seen or been part of that, it's truly something that is worth your time and energy and investment. It is just a tremendous recognition of wonderful work from around the world. And I really hope that we see a continued increase in submissions in that awards program from France. So excellence is at the forefront of all our DMA efforts to grow the direct marketing process and strengthen the direct marketing community. We all need to be excellent because potential threats to our future of growth and prosperity seem to face us everywhere we turn these days. That's why I say our job at DMA is to keep all of the marketing channels open and economically viable for marketers and consumers so that they can continue to use them in whatever combination works best for them. From email to the postal mainstream, from catalogs to RSS feeds, from landlines to cell phones and iPods to BlackBerries, the choices are clearly extensive and there's much more to come. Now today in the US, we face an almost perfect storm of environmentalists, privacy advocates, and other activist groups challenging our system of self-regulation. It goes far beyond anything we've seen. These activist organizations have celebrity support and the attention of the media. They've raised tens of millions of dollars from well-meaning foundations, and many of their messages are very appealing to consumers. Consumers are bombarded with thousands of advertising messages every day, everywhere they go. We know they want only communications that are relevant and timely to them as individuals. Consumers also tell us that they want marketers to do more on environmental issues. They want us to protect their privacy. In all these areas, we may never satisfy the activists. But as marketers, we must never stop focusing on what customers really want. So we're focusing on that as the key to raising the bar on our own standards of self-regulation. I believe these issues are global and that all marketers will have to deal with them to remain in business. So before I give you some perspective about what we're doing in the U.S., let me briefly describe or contrast some of the differences as I see it and similarities as I see it between us. In the U.S., we're very fortunate to have an economy that supports many nationwide brands, retail chains, and catalogs. All of them are fostered by one truly common market of business practices, laws, consumer protections, one post office, an addressing postcode system, and most importantly, unified self-regulatory practices. Now, we've watched with fascination as the EU has worked to build its common market, and we keep looking for opportunities to achieve uniformity that comes closer to what we have within our domestic market. We note especially the divergent treatment of data from country to country, different rules on promotional devices and discounts and sales, and regulation of labels such as country of origin. But we Americans have our own peculiarities, of course. For example, 50 states. Only a handful of our states permit internet or catalog customers to receive wine shipments at home. Now, that's something we understand is normal and a daily transaction here in France. Despite these differences, as I said before, the world is absolutely getting flatter. The need for marketers to self-regulate in order to keep all the channels open and economically viable is unprecedented both here in Europe and in the US. We're very, very happy to contribute to the promotion of self-regulation through our membership in FEDMA, and we support its work on issues of common concern. The environmental movement and concerns over global warming and deforestation are similar in both Europe and the US. They are all over the news and in the minds of consumers. And we realize that as direct marketers, we are environmentalists too. We can't cede that ground to other organizations that are activists that claim they're environmentalists as if we're not. We care about the environment. I have three children. I want them to grow up and have a planet to live in, and my grandchildren to have a planet to live in. Right? And so we really all do have a common interest here. We're already responsible stewards of the environment in many ways. But we haven't been able to describe our stewardship sufficiently to take the environment off the table in the debates to curtail advertising mail, for example. Last year, our DMA board of directors set in motion an improvement process so that we can really confidently step up to the environmental table. We called on our members to implement 15 key business practices in 5 major categories, including paper procurement and use, design, waste hygiene, printing and packaging, and recycling. They quickly became known as the Green 15, and we're setting benchmarks in each later this year. We also launched a Recycle Please initiative to build consumer awareness that mixed paper such as that used in catalogs and direct mail, can also be recycled after consumer use. Because in the US we have a much higher recycling of newsprint than catalogs and mail, we determined that recycled PLEs is one of the most important things we can do to protect our interest in the environment area. I'm pleased to note that over 60 major US marketers have signed on and are using this great opportunity to remind consumers that we're environmentalists too. I know that you are making similar efforts here, including the French envelope manufacturers who have worked with other industries and La Poste to develop sustainable practices and products for the direct mail industry in France. The concerns about environmental impact and sustainability for the future will continue to be very much on everyone's minds, especially here in the EU and the US. Buyers and consumers will judge us by our actions and with little regard to geographic or political borders. Personal privacy and safety of personal data protection are also concerns that absolutely transcend borders and oceans. Now, because of the differences between America and Europe that I have mentioned, I think that many times our approaches to this really shared challenge have been somewhat different. In some respects, we've allowed a bit more room for self-regulation in the US than here, but there are many opportunities to address privacy and data security concerns with self-regulation. We're very proud to be engaged in that process ourselves through our work with FEDMA. And as you know, privacy is seen as an interest to be protected rather than as a civil or human right, which sets up a very interesting difference and a very interesting philosophical debate that we need to engage in. We tend to ask first what harm we're working to avoid, and then we look for the best way to do that and often answer that question, that the best answer is self-regulation. And with great respect, it seems to us that having the view of privacy as an absolute entitlement does leave both the business community and the government with somewhat less flexibility. So again, an interesting area for us to explore together in terms of how that moves forward. It certainly narrows the field of possible policy responses to privacy concerns as they arise, especially where technology is involved and new technology is involved. For example, the new issue of behavioral targeted advertising on the internet has drawn the interest and concerns of regulators both in Washington and in Brussels. This practice holds great promise for providing consumers with highly relevant and useful information, as well as helping multi-channel marketers deliver the information that their customers want, exactly when and how they want it. But the issues regarding privacy are only beginning to be uncovered. In our country, the Federal Trade Commission has proposed self-regulatory principles while we see how the issue plays out. They call for clear, prominent consumer advice and notice, and an ability to opt out of the process. Here in the EU, FEDMA has taken the position, correctly we believe, that most of the behavioral targeting issues are already resolved by the e-commerce directive. And at the same time, FEDMA has engaged the European Commission in dialogue on self-regulation in some aspects of the subject. We're also looking forward to the upcoming EU report on how well the privacy policies of internet search engines operated by Google, Yahoo, Microsoft, and others comply with EU privacy law. In essence, as regulators proceed on both sides of the Atlantic, we'll continue to advocate in Washington and in Brussels on behalf of consumers' rights to control their information and make choices. Sometimes the solution may be self-regulation, sometimes it will be a statutory action. However these issues are resolved, marketers everywhere must keep their eyes on the most critical point, consumer trust. The whole process begins and ends with trust. Moving forward, consumer attitudes and behavior can only become more global in nature, which I believe will intensify the drive to move all marketing to direct marketing relationships. So I'll close where I began, with the assertion that marketing direct is the future of all marketing. With direct marketing becoming so important, the world getting flatter, and the customer gaining control, closer cooperation among the various direct marketing communities worldwide will benefit everyone. This is why the DMA and FEDMA have combined with ICANET in Madrid to provide a senior executive course in the latest currents in direct marketing each summer. And it's why we want to work so closely with you here to do similar things. That is also why our Global Knowledge Services Center, managed by Charlie Prescott, who I think many of you may know, has distributed a worldwide questionnaire to all DMAs, asking them to tell us the basic rules for email marketing worldwide, which we'll then publish on the internet. This will help companies who are using email in a global campaign to comply with local rules. We can't keep that information current without your help and everyone else's. Now, our annual conference and exhibition, the Global Event for Direct Marketers, provides an excellent backdrop for cultivating and nurturing this type of cooperation. Last year, we were in Chicago, and we had over 12,000 people there in the town with us, and it was just a tremendously energizing event. And as Bernard said, the main general session can go up to between 3,000 and 5,000 people, depending on who decides to get up that morning and come listen to me. But it's a great opportunity. DMA 08 this year will be our best ever. I say that every year, but I mean it. We keep getting better every year. And we're going to be in Las Vegas to make that happen. As we do every year, we'll be hosting an annual meeting of the DMA leaders from around the world there in addition to everything else. As part of the event, we have a separate event for that. Bernard has been there in the past. We look forward to seeing as many of you as possible that can attend. And let me add that this year, for the first time in many years, our annual conference will not conflict, I'm told, with your own event in Lille. Ours will run from October 11th through the 16th. So if you can make that trip to Las Vegas and bring as many of your colleagues with you, I think you will see a full force demonstration of what we call the power of direct: relevance, responsibility, and results. Those three R's are far more than a slogan for us. They truly are the watchwords for our future. Consumers want relevance, and marketers want to be relevant. You don't want to waste marketing resources on people who are just not interested. We all want to behave responsibly and be sure that we all do what's right. That way, both marketers and customers get the results they want. I want to thank you very, very much for your kind attention. I am just delighted to be here with you today. When I got this invitation, I was thrilled that we were able to make the schedule work to do this. I've enjoyed the other interactions that I've been able to have, and your hospitality since I arrived yesterday morning has been outstanding. I hope the beginnings of a wonderful relationship for me personally with you. Bernard, I understand there's some time for questions, so I'm happy to take those, and I'll put the translation device on, so if anyone needs to, I very much apologize for my inability to speak French. I wish I had my children with me, because they've done a much better job of learning it than I have, but I will depend on this crutch.
Okay, well, John, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Jean, good morning.
Good morning.
I am a bit surprised by the adjournment.
Introduce you.
Well, okay.
Introduce
my
you.
Name
for
is Jean Gedelbeck. We met, as you remember, in Boston last
Absolutely.
Year.
Absolutely.
At one of your conferences, you didn't mention at all. You seem to focus on DMA conference in October, And you keep a bit forgetting about your wonderful conference in May, which has been taking place for quite a few years, if I am not mistaken, and which will be taking place again this next May, if I am not mistaken, in a nice place called Orlando. Could you just tell us a few words about it? Because as you know, we are preparing a big group of French delegates to attend that conference.
Well, thank, first of all, thank you for pointing that out, because what I did not want to do is stand here and promote all of our conferences today and be accused of coming here to just do that. But thank you for the opening. We run actually 20 conferences a year. There's our annual conference and 19 others that are specific to various segments. And basically our second largest conference, as you point out, is what we now call ACCM, the Annual Conference for Multi-Channel Mergers. It was originally called the Catalyst Conference, right? We do that in partnership with Penn Media, which also brings tremendous potential in terms of that relationship, because it really causes us to reach out beyond just the DMA perspective on this. And as you know, whenever you're working with a partner, you're challenged to do things better and to continue to raise the bar. And so that is also a very exciting event in May. Information about that is up on our website, as a matter of fact, and I would encourage it, particularly with, I know, the catalog community here, the intensity of that in France. I just think that would be another wonderful opportunity to have you come over. So if you haven't planned on doing that, that would be great. And as you go to the website, you'll be able to see all of the various events we have. So we have these 19 or 20 conferences and then a whole host of other seminars and webinars, et cetera. But you're absolutely correct. That is a huge one for us. And we look forward to seeing as many of you there as possible. I will be there as well. I assure you. Any other questions?
Last October in Chicago, you told us.
Yeah. Who are you?
I'm Laurence Paquet. I attend some DMA. And last October, you told us about a movement called Do Not Mail.
Yes.
Is this movement is growing in the United States?
Very much so. The Do Not Mail movement is extremely aggressive right now. We have activity in 17 of the 50 states where bills have been introduced. That has grown from 3 years ago, just 3 or 4 states with activity. So that has been spreading like wildfire. That's the bad news. The good news is that we've been able to defeat every one of those bills so far in the states, but it has taken a tremendous amount of resources. It gives me a sense of what it's like to work country by country in the EU, because we have to be on the ground, we have to be in the states, we have to be working with the legislatures, and it is a tremendous education process for us, because we really need to talk about it at 3 different levels, why do not mail is a bad idea. And first of all, before you even talk about those 3 issues, so many people in the United States will mix up before that education process, do not call with do not mail. They say, well, do not call worked. We stopped all the telephone calls at dinner time. So if that worked for calling, we might as well do the same thing with for mail. And that's the argument that the activists would have. We certainly talk about it being night and day in terms of the similarities between those two channels. And we've been able to articulate 3 reasons why Do Not Mail is a terrible idea, but this will be a long-term war that we're fighting, because the 3 reasons are it's really bad for business, obviously, particularly businesses that want to introduce a new product or offering, or a small business that's just trying to start and let themselves be known to an individual, particularly as we see that more and more businesses are using multiple channels of the mix. But it's also really bad for the consumer in terms of cutting off information about what they don't know about. The other thing, though, that most of the regulators and legislators and consumers were not aware of was how much our postal system is subsidized by advertising mail, and that about one-third of the revenues of the U.S. postal system come from advertising mail. And so if you were to take that mail out of the system, while nothing happened to our telephone network when the call stopped going through, right? When telemarketers stopped calling at dinner time, we still had the same telephone network in place. If you pulled a third of the advertising revenue subsidy out of the U.S. postal system, things that we take for granted, that the consumer takes for granted, like 6-day-a-week delivery, like very close post offices, like a level of service that they've grown to love, again, very much taken for granted, would be dramatically impacted. And then we also say, finally, that it's really unnecessary public policy because, unlike Do Not Call, we have a very effective mail preference service and an opt-out capability. And we've literally just over the past several months dramatically enhanced that. So where in the past it was a binary, if you came to our preference service, you opted out of all mail, and therefore if you were a DMA member or a subscriber to that preference service, you had to stop sending anything. We've now introduced a very granular company by company opt-out capability, and on top of that, optional for the companies if they want to put their individual brands up. And so if a consumer comes on and they think they want to opt out of all mail, the first thing we're going to do is take them through an education process of, gee, we understand what you're trying to do here. Now let's talk about, what are you really trying to accomplish? Do you still want to get this catalog? Do you want that magazine? Do you want to hear about this offer? And we can walk them through and really put some good position, and we call the site DMA Choice. And it's both for mail and for email preference now, and it'll expand to other channels. So thank you for that question. But that is actually when I talk about the activists before my talk, the environmental activists, they are distorting many of the facts in terms of forestry impact. They will not acknowledge the fact that we are frequently, most of the time, using resources that are grown as crops for the purposes of catalogs. We're not knocking down trees that shouldn't be taken down. We are recycling. And they're also not talking about the big picture on the environment in terms of the miles that are saved in terms of gasoline and gallons of gasoline that are saved if you're not necessarily driving to the mall every time you want to go shopping. And so if you really look at the big picture of the environment, a Do Not Mail bill is a terrible idea. So thank you for that question. It's where I spend a great deal of my time.
Just a little one.
Last question. One last question. Anyone?
For me. Is John, the internet the end of the push marketing?
Is it the end of push marketing? No, I think the question is the internet the end of push marketing? I don't think so at all. I think that the internet really facilitates an enormous opportunity for multiple channels to be tied together. The backbone of the internet clearly is what's providing the capabilities with Web 2.0 and social networking for the various communities, social networks and communities to come together. We also see that the internet combined with the physical catalog, right? So often people pick up that catalog, they still want the tactile feeling of the, or flipping through it, and then they'll go up on the internet and place their order. I can tell you in my household, with my three teenagers and my wife and myself, and my dad lives with us, and you know, we've got the entire spectrum of ages. That's the way the behavior works. I think it's typical of the research that we're seeing as well, that the channels are working together, and if anything, I think the internet combined with other channels really facilitates both push and pull and multi-channel capability. So it's a tremendous enabler, and I just think it's nothing but opportunity for us.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you for your attention. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.